ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Warwick's Weekly Wrap.
And joining us once again for a look at the week in sport is Warwick Hadfield. Warwick, good evening to you. Welcome back.
Good evening to you too, Philip.
Now, cricket news. We'll get there in a minute. But how about the AFL? You can't. they knew. I forget which Prime Minister, which Treasurer it was. I think it might have been Paul Keating, who said, "Never stand between a state premier and a bag of money." Well, I tell you what, never stand between the AFL and a bag of money either.
Kerry Packer said that about Malcolm Turnbull, too.
Did he? Because here's the AFL, fresh from travesties such as abolishing the centre bounce. They've now decided to replace the top eight with the top 10.
Mm.
And, well, explain what's going on.
Two words. Well, one word. Television.
Yeah.
As we know, they didn't, the AFL didn't give in to the request for a night grand final. And these are all the trade-offs ever since. We've got State of Origin back. And now we have these, instead of having a bye, we have this round, but where the four bottom teams play each other. So yes, it's a. I mean, the idea of calling it a wild card thing, I think that was just some sort of.
Where is it borrowed from? American.
The American National NFL in America.
Okay, so they play it. So essentially, yes. What's going to happen at the end of the season is that there'll be a top eight now, but the story. Well, there'll be a kind of top 10 because in the week between, because normally they finish the home and away games, and then there's a week off before the finals. In that week off, on presumably what, Friday and Saturday nights, there's going to be a game between seven will play 10 and eight will play nine, and the winner of those
progresses.
So even if you finish the season in eighth spot, you're not guaranteed a spot.
It's all a plot to get Sydney into the finals. That's what it all. You Sydney siders have taken over running the AFL. Tommy Harley. See, look, Tommy Harley goes to the AFL, and look what happens. Sydney's running the show.
So it's about. Come on, we're going to get in the top four next year. You watch it's about appeasing the TV networks, is it? Because this gives them games on Friday and Saturday nights in that week off.
Yeah, it does. And it's also the clink of the turnstiles as well for the AFL. Two more finals games. And the finals games have been extraordinarily well attended. Now,
Where would they be? Actually, there's a home ground advantage being given, isn't there?
That's right. And look, do you remember that since the final top eight, more teams have come into the competition? So, I mean, you could justify it in that particular way that, you know, there was a top eight when there were three or four fewer teams. I mean, Port Adelaide didn't come in until the 90s after the top eight had been implemented. And since then, of course, you've had the Gold Coast and Greater Western Sydney. And give or take a certain or uncertain stadium, there could be another team. That's all going into the Houses of Parliament in Tasmania at the moment. But my old mate Richard Flanagan and a few others are stirring the possum big time down there, and they've got a rally coming up, no stadiums rally, so we'll be interested to see how that all pans out.
I don't think they can afford it, can they?
Well, everybody who's got the qualifications to say those things agrees with that, but, you know, it's heart over head or head over heart or head over heels, I'm not really sure.
Well, put it this way, I mean, they probably can't afford to build it, but they probably almost certainly can't afford to run it either because it's going to cost money. It's not going to make money, is it?
Yeah, there are plenty of people putting a counter-argument that once it's built, the revenues that come into the state of Tasmania will be so great that it'll pay for itself. I mean, you know, vested interests and a lot of people involved in sport and football in Tasmania, they're greatly wedded to the concept. And I noticed that the Tasmanian team had a board meeting the other day, so they're obviously pushing on and they've started signing up players to play in the VFL and so on. But look, getting back to the AFL, it's all about money to the AFL. You're right. You don't stand between the AFL and an idea to make money. And I have to say, Andrew Dillon, the current CEO, he's not as impressive, if I can use that word, about Gillon McLachlan and Andrew Demetrio. Forthright, arrogant, and bombastic might be other words you might use. He didn't. he didn't do as great a job in selling it as they would have done. But in the end, I think he shares their belief that the AFL is a perfect beast and can do no wrong. So this, despite all the clamour and outcry, mediocrity being rewarded and all these other things, it's definitely going ahead. So,
I mean, in a way, I suppose you could argue that if you come seventh, then, you know, you should be able to beat the 10th place team, although, you know, as we know, this is always a sometime thing. But then again, you don't get a week off, whereas everyone else does. So you've really...
Yeah, but there's also the week off when a team makes a preliminary final.
That's
from
true.
The top four. So, look, you know, and look, if you play, if you did make it from 10th spot, you'd play something like 28 games in a season. So it must have got some agreement from the Players Association to do that. So there's an awful lot, nudge, wink,
wink. What do you reckon? Is it a good idea or not?
I mean, I find that week when there's no footy on, it's that bye week,
no good.
Pretty awful. I mean, look, having said that, the AFLW is underway, and you know, the AFL will be preening itself this morning and a few other mornings going around because everyone's talking about this wild card or top 10 instead of talking about cricket. But the downside of that is it's also drawing attention away from the AFLW final season, which is underway, and which last weekend, Brisbane have taken that step closer to anointing their city, after which they're named, as the football capital of Australia. As we know, the rugby league team, men and women, the men's AFL side, and now the women, 8 wins in a row. Pretty impressive against Melbourne, who finished on top of them on the ladder. But this is a huge hit and run from the Lions. But, the gap between the first team and the bottom teams is terrible. Even the gap between the first team and the fourth team is quite wide because North Melbourne kept Hawthorn goalless in a qualifying final, 1v4. That's extraordinary. The other match, you know, pretty intensely competed between the Lions and Melbourne. But, you know, and Adelaide's knocked St Kilda over, so they might look like they're one of the perennials. But with those top three sides and beyond that, you know, the standard of the competition can still be, well, très ordinaire, to be perfectly honest.
Yes, it is. The whole final system actually was designed by a bloke called Ken McIntyre.
Wonderful fellow he was.
Ken McIntyre. The modern eight system was devised.
It was the system that he devised was the McIntyre 8. It was augmented a little bit because it was felt that it wasn't entirely fair. But Ken McIntyre was an extraordinary person. He had a knighthood from the Portuguese government.
Really?
He tried to prove, and I don't think he ever really finally did it, but he did try to prove that the Portuguese came to Australia before everybody else. And there was the story of the mahogany.
Oh, was he the man behind the mahogany ship thing?
Yeah, a mahogany ship at Warrnambool.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, he was given this knighthood. When he was old, he really found it hard to walk, and I'd often see him walking down Packington Street in Geelong, and I'd offer him a lift home, and he took me into his house, and he showed me all his papers, and this irrefutable proof he believed he had that the Portuguese had been there, and then he took me into the room to show me this huge framed certificate from the Portuguese government. But he's had another claim to fame, as he was the person who named Geelong the Cats.
Is that right?
Mm.
Really?
So they were originally...
What were they before?
The Pivotonians, because Geelong was the pivot of the colony, because of Corio Bay.
Hang on, when are we talking about? What years are we talking about?
1920s.
They were known as the Pivotonians.
Mm. And in fact, one of the coteries at Geelong is still called the Pivots, because Billy and Barry hold fort there every home match day.
So when did he come up with the Cats?
Well, it was about a black cat. He drew a black cat for good luck. He was a bit of an animator or a drawer, cartoonist. And it's just stuck. I think it got published in the Geelong Advertiser or something like that. And the black was dropped and they just became the Cats. So he was a fascinating man. I used to love talking to him. He really was an incredible, brain.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So, you know, when you start to do all this, I was only telling someone the other day that I offered her, she came for dinner, and I said, would you like a macadamia nut to start with? And I said, this is named after the person who umpired the first ever Australian rules football match. And she just looked at me. She said, you're kidding. She said, I learned about him at school. Because he'd created macadamised roads. And I said, yeah, well, he had a few claims to fame. And then in honour of all these other great things, they named the macadamia nut after him.
What was his name?
Macadam. from he was a teacher, a chemist, I think he was, at one of the private schools at in Melbourne. I'm just going to have to do what we all do these days. Macadamia nut was named after. Here we go.
John McAdam.
John McAdam. You're faster than me on the old Google. He was a school.
No, I didn't Google. It was out of my head.
I'll give you that.
John McAdam. So he of the famous macadamized road. That is, invented. He was in. Well, he's an engineer, was he? Developed a system for
a chemist.
Yeah,
I think a chemical engineer probably.
You would build a proper road that wouldn't wash away all the time.
Yeah. So look, I mean, when you start to think back and look at all these, and in rugby league, you know, you've got the same sort of things with the JJ Gilton and Shield and all these wonderful people who are when it's racing season, you go, oh, the McKinnon Stakes. Who was McKinnon? Then you look it up, LKS McKinnon. He was the handicapper who tried to stop Farlap winning the Melbourne Cup by weighing it down. So, the history is just the most gorgeous thing when you take the time to go back and have a look at how it all started.
I forget history. What's happening in the cricket?
Bo Webster, the boy from Snug. He was what... But I played against Snug. For the Bunyip.
Snug's a little town on the Huon Valley of Tassie.
It is, and he was watching. He was in his cot watching because I played against his dad. And we played on despite the rain, and the ball was like a piece of soap. And I often wonder, this boy was absolutely brought up to play cricket, but it took him until he was 30 to break into the Australian side, and he looks like he's not going to give it up without a fight, because his first wicket yesterday was Travis Head, and then he's taken four more today, just to remind the selectors that, if he misses out on the bat, then as a true all-rounder, which he appears to be, he can come in and do something with the ball, and that's the essence of being an all-rounder. So when they come to make this decision about whether Jake Weatherald, who didn't fail today but didn't get any runs in the Tasmania second innings, he got 30. Are they going to leave out Bo Webster, who's in fine form? Now, we're waiting to see how Cameron Green goes bowling in the Sheffield Shield match in Western Australia. George Bailey's talking about him needing to bowl as many as 20 overs, which is a big ask, given that he hasn't bowled a real lot in recent times and he does have this troublesome back. So they've got this... I mean, Bailey said this final round of Sheffield Shield matches before the first test is all about finding out how to fit, not 15 into 11, but certainly 12 into 11 before they pick the final side to play against England. I mean, Travis Head failing yesterday, doesn't really matter. Travis Head's going to be one of the first pick. Steve Smith scored a half century today as New South Wales was routed by Victoria. I watched some of it. And what a joy it is to watch Sheffield Shield on television, I can tell you. He is in red-hot form. And I've had some old cricketers ringing me up in the last days to tell me about his technique these days. He's created something that, they reckon no one else has ever done it. With he's got this technique. He goes about 3 inches outside the off stump. And because he goes back as well, and he's basically that what they say, he's basically playing on the front foot all the time. If the ball's outside off stump, he knows he can just let it go. And if it's not on, if it's just on the wicket, he can work it through the leg side. And people are just saying, we know he's one of the best batsmen of his time, but he has created something that no one else has done. And these are good judges who've played a lot of Test cricket themselves. And because he's so good off his pads, anything that's basically on his legs, he can whip through mid-wicket and so on. So we have, I think, given all the things that have happened to him in his career, we're going to be blessed in the next little while. In fact, how about this? There was a queue to get into the Sydney Cricket Ground to watch a Sheffield Shield match the last couple of days, and I can tell you that hasn't happened for a long time. And it's the presence, I guess, of Steve Smith. Maybe some people came along to see Mitchell Starc bowl. He's gone pretty well. Our man of Constance Sorrow, Sam Constance, he's not done particularly well. I did watch his innings. He was trying awfully hard to build an innings, but in the end he just got into the double figures and then got out again. I think the young man's got a few issues still to be sorted out. And Matty Renshaw is getting runs for Queensland, but that's all a bit too late at the moment. But it'd be interesting to see. I mean, obviously, it's got five tests, a long time these days in cricket. England are resting players. Usman Khawaja's being rested by Queensland for this particular game. And look, I've got to tell you this. This is another story from your. I tend to have a lot of stories from the olden days because I probably go back that far. How about this? In 1921, and they talk about scheduling in cricket today, Australia, the Australians, Warwick Armstrong's Australians, finished a test match in Manchester and were expected to play against Essex in a tour game about 36 hours later. And the train was late. When they finally got to Euston Station, they then had to catch another train out to Chelmsford. So Warwick Armstrong said to his openers, "You go out there and bat for as long as you can because I want the rest of the boys to have a sleep in these deck chairs." yeah, it's just lovely that to think that, imagine catching a train. I mean, Richie Benaud, when he made his debut for New South Wales, he had to catch a train all the way to Perth. So things have changed. That was in the early 50s. So things have changed a fair bit. The arrival of the aeroplane has changed not just the world of travel for tourists, but it's certainly changed sport because these days replacements of, you know, you don't have to pick a squad of 17 anymore for a tour because you can fly somebody in 24 hours.
Exactly. Anyway, it's all ahead of us. Now, rugby, by the way, the NRL has continued to double down on its threat to ban players for 10 years if they join Rugby 360. Well, two things. One, we have no idea whether Rugby 360 is actually going to see the light of day. And two, I mean, they keep saying this, but in fact, legally they can't, can they?
No, well, we've talked about this, Silvio Fischini and Dennis Tutty and the 1977 High Court, Kerry Packer versus the Teston County Cricket Board, all these things show restraint of trade and so on. Look, Rugby 360 sort of comes and goes, and the latest little thing is that Payne Haas, this wonderful prop forward, for Samoa and Brisbane Broncos, he's been offered $3 million. Now, the Samoa couldn't possibly afford that. That's roughly the GDP of Samoa.
Yeah.
And certainly the Brisbane Broncos and Australian Rugby League can't afford that. So what they're doing, they're offering legacy over legal tenders, the sort of the line they're throwing at him, that he'll be remembered as the greatest prop forward since, say, Arthur Beetson, if he stays in rugby league. But against that, you know, rugby league is famous in the eastern states of Australia and increasingly in a few islands in the South Pacific and sometimes in the northern counties of England. But if this R360, which is, you know, planned to be played in major cities all over the planet, goes ahead, well, his capacity to earn endorsements on top of his $3 million grows considerably when you remember that R. Federer got $40 million to promote spaghetti. So, you know, I mean, that's not to say that Payne Haas would ever end up quite in that category, but the opportunities that present themselves in the short time he'll have a shorter time in rugby league than Roger Federer had in tennis. And so these are the things they've all got to be weighed up.
They do. Meanwhile, of course, we're world champs in rugby league, both men's and women's. The Wallabies have lost to Italy. Well, you know, doesn't matter.
I just heard Fitzy rise off his bed, ready to throw the radio out the window. I watched the game, and the problem was the Wallabies were good. They had some good work, but they conceded too many penalties, and European rugby is all about trying to force a penalty and having a number 10 who can kick them over. And Paolo Gabisi kicks him from anywhere for the Italians. He's a big left footer, and every time they conceded a penalty, he just, you know, whether it was 50 metres out, he just banged it over. But there's a few other good stories to come out of that. Michael Liner's dynasty is turning up all over the planet. Another of his boys, Lewis, scored the winning try for Italy because Michael married an Italian woman. And the children, have Italian names. One of them, Niccolo. Mm. And Niccolo is the third son. He's just decided to throw in his lot with the Queensland Reds, which probably means he probably will play for Australia if he's good enough. So you've got Tom, who's already played in his father's number 10 jumper for the Wallabies. Lewis, who plays on the wing. Very big, strong boy, too. I mean, he really brushed aside the Wallabies' defence to score that try. So it's a great story, Michael Liner. Of course, it wasn't that long ago. Michael Liner was on his deathbed, too, with a brain injury. Yeah. So it's a wonderful story. I saw him play his first ever game for Queensland. And... He kicked. It was there, number 10, his first game. to do the kickoff, and he kicked the ball out on the full, and everyone said, oh, who's this guy? didn't he prove us wrong over the next 20 years?
He sure did.
He certainly was a wonderful player.
All right, Warwick. Good to talk.
Yeah, I think we've covered most of the things. We didn't get to the soccer. Do you think?
The FIFA World Cup. Yeah, Tony Popovich says he's looking everywhere. He's looking even at this young bloke from Manchester United, James Overy. He's only 22. Well, he's never made the Man United senior team, but he's obviously pretty good.
Yeah, well, I mean, the other thing that Popovich is doing, because the Australians have qualified automatically, he's picking and choosing his friendlies, as they're known, and he's got a couple in America coming up in the next fortnight or so to get to get his team used to American conditions. And one of those, of course, would be knowing how to use a burner phone to make sure you get through customs.
We're playing Venezuela in Houston. Yep. Better look skyward just in case there are no incoming missiles, I suppose.
Well, I mean, these are the things. I mean, there is some talk about some matches being shifted from the United States to Canada because the players, some players from some of these countries, which are not exactly flavour of the month with a certain American president, don't particularly want to go to the United States. Yeah, it's very interesting that Venezuela.
To read this morning that some tickets are going for $100,000 to the World Cup, the FIFA World Cup.
Yeah, and how much of that will go to – what's the percentage to FIFA representatives? Yeah. He didn't really say that, did he?
Well, there's a kind of argument out there, isn't there? Is that if you're going to have a scalping market, why shouldn't the football organisation get the money rather than scalpers?
And yeah, but how they get – yeah, well, I mean, what? So they you take it back to the to FIFA, and FIFA says, all right, we'll sell this for $100,000 instead of the $10,000 you paid for it, but we get to keep 10%.
Well, they've got a resale market. You see, they sell tickets, right? So say your ticket costs you, I don't know, $1,000, but if you don't want it, you can put it back into what they're called their resale pool, where people can bid anything for them. And so FIFA say, well, why should – we not take that money rather than saying a scalper, answering a Facebook ad.
Yeah, that's true. And FIFA's a bit shorter dough, so I can understand.
They're so short a dough, exactly.
And, of course, the tickets for the sesquicentenary test are going to be sold by allotment too, because they're in such demand this is cricket, back to cricket. Somehow we managed to get back to that. So there's plenty to... where your suggestion carries some weight, that perhaps, if they are sold on a black market, perhaps instead of them being sold on a black market, they go through the official body, and that money goes back into the sport and down to the grassroots, where all that money always goes, Philip.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Thank you, Warwick.
good on you, Philip.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.